The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High five.
High five.
Casino.
Casino.
Win at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
The Middle is supported by Journalism Funding Partners, a nonprofit organization striving to increase the sustainability of local journalism by building connections between donors and news organizations. More information on how you can support The Middle at listentothemiddle.com. Welcome to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson, coming to you from St. Louis Public Radio this week. But our house DJ Tolliver is at Nashville Public Radio because I guess, Tolliver, you like hot chicken more than toasted ravioli.
Toasted ravioli? That don't sound too good, man. I don't know.
That's what they have St. Louis. Here. That's famous in St. Louis. So we've also got a studio Fair audience enough. Here in St. Louis for the first time. So if you hear people clapping and laughing or booing, that's them. Tolliver, we also have some new Middle listeners this week.
Yes, indeed. Let's welcome the listeners of Cincinnati Public Radio. Welcome.
They welcome, Cincinnati. And let's talk for a minute about the three cities that we're talking about here. St. Louis is shrinking in size every year. It actually peaked in population around 1950, just after the Gateway Arch was designed, when it was the eighth largest city in the country. Cincinnati's population is actually growing slightly after decades of declines, but it's still much lower than it was at its peak. And Nashville is growing relatively fast. And the 2020 census recorded the most people living in that city ever. So what we want to know this hour is what you think cities that are shrinking can do to turn things around. You can call us at 844-4MIDDLE. That is 844-464-3353. Or write to us at listentothemiddle.com. And we'll get to your calls in a moment. But first, last week we asked you, do you trust our court system? And I got to say, I was pretty shocked at how many listeners do not. Listen to some of these voicemails that came in.
Hi, my name is Kelly, and I'm in Nashville, Tennessee.
My name is Sam Dunham. I live in Anchorage, Alaska.
I'm Cassandra, calling from Las Vegas.
Hello, this is David from Louisiana. My big concern regarding the courts is, of course, concerning the Supreme Court, which seems to be accountable to nobody.
It seems to me the reason that it's become a politicized issue because we have a system where we have a political figure who chooses who our judges are going to be.
I trust the courts because I have to. Even if I don't always agree with it, I have to trust that they are still going to do their job.
While it's clearly not a perfect system, I think people should take a beat and look at the magnificent achievement that a functional court system is within the context of history and the world. It does allow us to track down corruption and hold people accountable in a way that you simply can't do if you live in a country without a court system that at least strives to be fair and impartial.
Well, thanks to everyone who called in. And you can hear that full show by subscribing to The Middle Podcast in partnership with iHeart Podcasts on the iHeart app or wherever you listen to podcasts. Okay, so our topic this hour, many cities, including St. Louis, where I am this week, lost population during the pandemic. In fact, between April 2020 and July 2022, during the height of COVID, this city lost 5% of its population. But even after COVID, St. Louis, like so many other cities across the country, continue to see population drain. St. Louis recently dipped below 300,000 for the first time since the 1800s. And according to a study from the University of Illinois Chicago, thousands of American cities could be virtual ghost towns by the year 2100 because of population decline. So what is happening and what can cities do to turn things around? Tolliver, what is that number for people to call?
It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also email us at listentothemiddle.com.
Let's meet our panel. Joining me here in St. Louis, Ness Sandoval, professor of demography and sociology at St. Louis University. Ness, welcome.
Thank you very much.
And from Detroit, another city with its own longstanding struggles with population loss, Dante Chinney, director of the American Communities Project at Michigan State, who reports on demographics and politics for the Wall Street Journal. Dante Chinney, welcome to you.
Thanks for having me.
And before we get to the phones, it seems to me that there are three things that might cause a city to grow or shrink in population, and they would be opportunity, cost of living, and quality of life. And I would include in quality of life things like crime and education and transit. Ness Sandoval, am I missing anything?
I think those are the three core factors that impact a city's population. I would add another one. How a person imagines their life in a city. Are you capturing the imagination of a person when they come to a city? Like, do they want to make the city their life, their American dream? Can they find it there? And so a lot of cities that we see that are growing today are capturing the imagination of a younger population. Hmm. And so they want to experience life in those cities. And cities that are shrinking were no longer part of that imagination.
So how are those cities, I mean, let's say Nashville, we said it's at the highest level it's ever been. How is that capturing the imagination?
Well, I think part of it's jobs, part of it's a good university. You have a fair amount of recreational activities around football and other sporting events. So that captures you have the music industry. Mm-hmm. So that's capturing a younger generation of what life would be like in those cities. Dallas is the same way, Houston. So we see these cities that are capturing the imagination of people who are movers. And we have to remember, to grow, you have to have people move into your city through migration. The second way you grow is you have more babies than people dying. And the reality is that the current estimates for the United States by the Congressional Budget Office, around 2042, births and deaths will be the same. Mm. And we see already in many cities in the United States, deaths outnumber births. And so this is, if you're going to grow and you already have more people dying and are born, the only way you can grow is through migration.
Migration. Dante Chinney, you just heard Ness Sandoval mention some cities in Texas. A lot of the fastest growing cities are in the Sun Belt, Texas, Florida, places like that. Is that, do you think, because of the cost of living, opportunity, politics, what?
I think when you look at the growth in the South, I think economic opportunity is a lot of it. I think climate, which some of that actually may end up reversing in the next 20 years. I mean, I know in Michigan, they're thinking that they're going to get climate refugees at some point here. And I think you look at, I'm still astounded by the number of people moving to Phoenix where it's 110 degrees and there's no water, but they keep coming. And at some point, it's a climate, better way of life, better economy. Whether or not that continues, that's a really complicated question. I don't know.
The trends in many of these cities have been going on for decades, but how much did the pandemic accelerate the flight from cities, Dante Chinney?
So I would say that cities have three big challenges right now. One is this, what happened with COVID and people fleeing the cities. I'm going to say, for the record, I know I may be an outlier on this, but I actually think this is somewhat overstated. I think this idea that, like, I read countless stories about everybody was leaving New York. I went to New York recently. It still looks like there's a lot of people there. The population hasn't moved as much as people think they have. I also think that, like, you know, there was an immediate reaction and people left some of these places. I actually think some of that is actually kind of fixing itself a little bit. People are coming back. But the longer-term problems for the cities, there's a medium-term problem, which is, I do think the way that we're working is changing. That's the one thing that's come out of COVID that seems like it's a real thing. Fewer people going into the office, which means you've got a lot of buildings in cities that you don't know what you're going to do with. You're going to have to convert a lot of them. That's a real challenge. But the long, long, long-term problem, the thing we're talking about here, and even when you talk about population changes and population growth, is for a long time, the cities, the boom in cities of the past 25, 30 years maybe, has really been about this idea of young people moving to cities because they wanted to be in a different place than they were. They don't want to be in suburbia. Mm-hmm. They want to live in a different place than their parents lived. A little bit about what the professor was talking about in terms of, like, capturing the imaginations of people. But When they decide they want to have kids, that's a different question. So I think a lot of what you're seeing in a lot of cities is people come to cities when they're young, they're in their 20s, they want to have a good time, they want to go to bars, they want nightlife, they want all the good things that come with being in a city. But then the schools come into the equation.
Right. And then they've got to move to the burbs. Let's go to the phones. And our number is 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Connie is joining us from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Connie, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. It's good to talk with you. I think we need to first think out why we want to save cities. If cities are declining, should they be? Perhaps their time has ended. I think we want to say that they probably aren't. I know St. Louis, at least, has a wonderful history. It's got a wonderful heritage. It's got wonderful people there. And it's an efficient way to provide services in the area and to enhance the quality of life. I think the way we can bring people in simply is through immigration. There's a lot of biases and prejudices that need to be overcome. But once we do that, I think if we welcome people, welcome young families, welcome children, I think that a lot of our problem will be solved.
Okay, Connie, thank you for that. Ness Sandoval, immigration, you brought that up. You brought up migration from different cities in the country, but what about immigration from other countries?
It's part of the solution. There aren't enough immigrants coming into the United States to solve every problem in every city. And so we have to recognize for a city of St. Louis, it will not solve the challenge for the city of St. Louis. It's one factor that will help St. Louis City turn things around. But St. Louis City needs American citizens moving to the city. I would say that, when we think about, is the city dying? Many people who are leaving the city are just moving 2 miles away to the county. And so
which is the case in many, many cities that in fact, the metro areas in these places are still growing.
Yeah.
And it's just the city itself that may be losing
and
population.
I would argue that the city county here in St. Louis, it's essentially demographically one unit because so many people are crossing that border every single day for work, school, and they're moving. If we look at the tax return data, we see that this St. Louis City and St. Louis County are dependent on each other. And so the reality is what we're seeing are administrative changes by city boundaries. But within the metropolitan region, there's tremendous population movement. And so we have to recognize that there is some out-migration, but for the most part, it's fairly stable.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see if it just sort of ebbs and flows. And sometimes people move to the suburbs and sometimes the city's hot again. Tolliver, you know, when I was growing up, I used to fly through St. Louis from Champaign, Illinois on TWE, Trans World Express. And when you got to Lambert Airport in St. Louis, you could go almost anywhere in the world.
Yeah, it's not really like that anymore. In fact, there's only one transatlantic route these days from St. Louis, and it goes to Frankfurt, Germany. But listen to this clip from 1961 about the promise of what was known as Lambert Field.
Over 10 million passengers and visitors pass through this building each year. More than 220,000 landings and takeoffs, commercial, private, and military, were logged last year. From here, St. Louisans range out over the entire globe. Lambert Field is big business, a big business operated at a profit by the city of St. Louis.
It's always interesting, Tolliver, to fly into St. Louis because the runways are still very big because of the history, but the planes often not so much anymore. Southwest has been making a big push into St. Louis. We will be right back with more of your calls on the middle.
High Five Casino. High Five Casino is a social casino with real prizes and big Vegas hits at highfivecasino.com. The hottest games right from Vegas and all winnings go straight to your bank account. Hundreds of exclusive games, free daily rewards, and come back to get free coins every 4 hours. Only at highfivecasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details at highthenumber5casino.com.
High Five Casino.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen.
we're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. If you're just tuning in, The Middle is a national call-in show focused on elevating voices from the middle, geographically, politically, and philosophically, or maybe you just want to meet in the middle. This hour, I'm at St. Louis Public Radio, and we're asking you what cities that are losing population can do to turn things around. Tolliver, can you give that number for people to call in?
Mm-hmm. It's 8444-MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. You can also write to us at listentothemiddle.com or on social media.
I'm joined by St. Louis University Professor of Demography and Sociology, Ness Sandoval, and Dante Chini, Director of the American Communities Project at Michigan State University. And before we go back to the phones, Ness Sandoval, what about the numbers? Do you trust the numbers from the census about how many people are in these cities?
I believe these are estimates, and I believe they're very good estimates. But you have to remember, they are an estimate. There's administrative data underneath these numbers that we can verify. So the births and deaths come from the Centers for Disease Control. Right. The housing survey, we can look at the housing permits. And so we have to remember that these are estimates, and with any estimate, yeah, there's a margin of error. I think we should focus on the trend. And so if you see a trend over 2 or 3 years, mm-hmm, the estimate is probably correct.
Dante Chini, what about the political implications of the cities that are rising and falling in population? Obviously, more people in a city, more people in a state. You have more electoral votes. You have more congressional, right, representation, et cetera.
Yeah. So the congressional representation and the electoral college representation are a little different. So people think about all these cities are growing in Texas. That must mean Texas is growing. It means a lot for Texas in terms of electoral votes, but what it really means is the cities grow. Look, there's a saying that I'm sure the professor hears that we talk about as journalists all the time, which is density makes Democrats. So the more dense a population is in an area, the more likely it is to vote Democratic. This is even true if you look at small rural areas. The urban core, such as it is, in them will be Democratic. So, for instance, in Texas, Dallas is growing, Fort Worth is growing. Fort Worth is now Democratic, and Tarrant County around Fort Worth is now Democratic. So in terms of drawing up those congressional seats, obviously you can draw seats a lot of different ways. But if you really were drawing a true representation, the urban parts of Texas are blue and getting bluer. But Texas is massive. And what it really means in terms, mm-hmm, of the electoral votes is Texas keeps gaining seats. Those are red electoral votes, even though in terms of what's happening in those urban areas, the urban areas are getting bluer. One other really quick point I want to throw out,
yeah,
about Nashville. Nashville is really interesting because it is growing. It's a really interesting city. I love visiting it, but it's one of those places where the county and the city are one thing. So Davidson County and Nashville, so it's almost like the suburbs and the city are one thing in Nashville. Now there's also suburbs outside of there, obviously, but Davidson County is, it's pretty much contiguous with the city of Nashville. So it's, you're getting some of that St. Louis City, St. Louis County thing. That's all Davidson County. It's all Nashville in Tennessee.
Let's go to the phones and Robert, who's in New Milford, Connecticut. Robert, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, guys. I'm actually in human resources and I actually hire engineers for tech companies. And I have a little bit of insight on the industry. And I feel during pandemic, some of the cities, they actually took advantage of attracting remote workers by offering them $10,000 or $15,000 for relocation to those cities. And another thing that universities can do is take advantage of being nonprofit. And, every tech college, they have OPT for these tech students for, universities who are studying for computer. They can attract foreign students to come to their colleges. And another thing cities can do is attract the foreign investors who are basically legally buying their way into U.S., citizenship. They basically green card is for sale. So if they invest, I think $500,000 or $800,000 and employ two U.S. citizens, they can open up a business. And, that could be a huge market.
So you think that there are ways for cities to incentivize workers to come into the city, even if it may cost more, even if it may not be as good of a quality of life as they can get in some suburb somewhere?
Well, quality of life will obviously improve if there is investment from foreign companies and investors, right? I mean, it just goes hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. Robert, thank you for that call. Ness Sandoval, what do you make of that?
It's an interesting point. So when we look at population change, we look at household change. And so we always have to remember, like, if you lose 5,000 residents, you have to understand what were the types of households that you have lost. So if you look at the city of St. Louis as an example, almost all of the population change since 2019 is from Black families with children leaving the city. It's basically one component of the households leaving.
And they're leaving why?
It's a very complicated story, but part of it's schools, part of it's crime, part of it's opportunity structure. And they're moving 2 or 3 miles to St. Louis County, St. Charles County, where that opportunity structure is in place, it's accessible. But you have white households moving into the city. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are more white households in St. Louis City today than there were in 2010. So this, I would argue, is the city of St. Louis is not dying. It's going through a great metamorphosis of demographic change. It's losing families with children, and it's gaining what we call solos and dinks. Solo, double income, no kids.
Right.
And this is happening throughout the United States. And so these are larger changes where suburbs are just more conducive to families with children, and cities are attracting single and double income, no kid families.
Yeah.
Nesters. You have to remember, empty nesters are coming back into cities as well.
And let's go right back to the phones. Let's go to Jim. What do you think? What do you think cities can do here to turn things around if they're losing population?
I'm in Missouri, St. Joseph, Missouri right now. But we actually are from St. Louis originally, in the Maplewood neighborhood. And there's no reason for young families to be living in the city of St. Louis proper really anymore. There's a general feeling of lawlessness that it's unsafe, that schools are poor. Schools are not very high quality, put it that way. And for families, the suburbs offer more because they have better schools. There's better environments for the kids to grow up in. So to try to get families back just into St. Louis proper, they're going to have to get a handle on the crime. They have to have some housing and some schools that are up to the same standards that you'll find out in the suburbs, like out in the county.
Jim, thank you for that call. Dante Chinney, when you hear that, I'm sure there are many listeners, many people who have decided to move out of cities. And I don't want to pick on St. Louis. This isn't just about St. Louis. There are all kinds of cities dealing with these issues. But what about the idea of, people saying the schools aren't good enough, the crime is a problem, and when they leave, it sometimes can make those problems even worse.
Yeah, this is exactly what we were just talking about before with the changes that are happening in St. Louis are happening in Detroit too. Like the people that are leaving Detroit are Black families. The people are moving in. It is Detroit is it's still heavily African-American, but it's the white population in Detroit's growing, and it's young professionals with jobs. What do you do to get the families to stay? Because the other thing that families bring to a city is they bring stability, right? Like, otherwise, if you're just turning over 20 somethings every 10 years, it does. I mean, yes, the city's vibrant and exciting and things like that, but, you know, like, neighborhoods are built around families. And how do you get people to stay? I will say, I live in Washington, D.C. It's where we live. We raised two kids in Washington, D.C. The kids went to public schools in Washington, D.C. It's mm-hmm. doable, but that's because there's a section of Washington, D.C. where it's like, okay, that school's good enough, and we're going to make a go of it there. But the one thing that happened in D.C. is the real estate got so expensive, the families that stayed could not afford to pay for the house and the private school anymore. And all of a sudden, the public schools in upper Northwest D.C. all got very good. The one thing I would say about the schools in general, what made the schools quote unquote good was the parents mm-hmm. that stayed there with the kids had all been to college. And it's so much of it is driven by the population within the school. So I understand why people flee the cities, why families flee the cities. And I understand the idea that, like, the suburban schools are, you know, quote unquote better and safety, things like that. But what you're going to have to do to get these families to stay, this is what the cities have to do. It's very complicated. You're going to have to develop like a neighborhood or two where, like, okay, this area is safe for you now. Okay. Mm. And then we can grow that a little bit. Okay. Now this area is safe now. Okay. Like, these schools, it's going to cost a little more to live here, but you can live here. It's safe. And the schools are better. You have to kind of do that block by block and neighborhood by neighborhood to try to convince the families to stay.
Start small. Tolliver, I know that there are some messages coming in online.
Yes, a lot of them. Sherry suggests offer free or significantly reduced college. You'll be getting inundated with young blood, many of whom will stick around after getting embedded in the community. John in Harvard, Illinois writes, why would I live in a hugely expensive city whose services, schools, and amenities have eroded into unusable junk when I can move a bit away to a suburb and still have access to the city institutions like museums and sports teams? Junk. That's harsh.
Ness Sandoval, when you hear about the cost of living, can a city that is currently cheap stay that way for long?
It'll be difficult. I even think if we focus on St. Louis, I looked at Detroit, we can see that there are parts of the city that are just not affordable for a young family. And I don't even use the word affordable anymore, attainable. To get attainable, to have that American dream of that house, just about a block from here, a home sold for $1 million. That is not attainable for a young family. In many of the neighborhoods that are desirable, you have homes going for $700,000.
Right.
In a city that's quote-unquote dying. The city's not dying. There's tremendous demand to live in some of these neighborhoods. I'll give you one interesting fact. St. Louis City is the second most popular city in Missouri for out-of-state movers. So they're coming into the city from Boston, New York, Houston, Dallas. But there's only a set of neighborhoods that are getting this benefit. And in those neighborhoods, you see the neighborhoods change in terms of income, education. Some of the neighborhoods have, on average, a median household income like $115,000 now, which was not the neighborhood 20 years ago. So some of these neighborhoods are going through gentrification, tremendous amount of displacement happening there. And so parts of the city are on fire. Other parts are declining. So we have to recognize that. I would say that there are at least four different St. Louis cities. Mm-hmm. It depends which part of the city you're in and how you're experiencing it.
Let's go to Rita, who's in Houston, Texas, on the phone. Hi, Rita. Welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hey, I have to say something really interesting. My mother was born in 1922 in St. Louis, and her father owned a grocery store. The Depression forced him out of business because he couldn't offer credit anymore. People couldn't pay. They moved to California. Most recently, I went back, I'd say maybe 5 years ago, I went back, and my cousin took me around to my grandfather's store that was still standing, but it was boarded up, and it was in a terrible neighborhood. He took it to me to my great-grandfather's house. That was a beautiful house at one time, but the roof was caved in. He said I could buy that house for $1 if I put at least $250,000 in to fix it up. He goes, but you can't live here. The crime is so bad that you would not want to be here. In fact, I bought an old car. I couldn't even drive my new car into this neighborhood. with the fear of getting carjacked. So, you know, my God.
But so, Rita, you feel safe in Houston. You like being in Houston.
I'm actually in the outside area. I'm in Sugar Land, which is probably one of the most diverse areas in the country. We have people from all over the world that live in Sugar Land, and it is absolutely stunningly beautiful. There's not a gum wrapper on the sidewalk. It is so clean. There's no homeless people. It's like a freaking utopia compared to, you know, St. Louis, which actually is an amazing city with a ton of history. I was on a layover, and I had to stay another day. My cousin went to work. I'm like, what am I going to do? I want to go to the museum. I went to the downtown history museum. And that big mural of Charles Lindbergh on the wall. I mean, it's just amazing. But it really talked about what killed St. Louis was racial issues. It was supposed to be the New York of the Midwest, but racial issues destroyed that city. I'll tell you what, doing better with racial issues can bring that city back.
Okay, Rita, thank you very much. I want to go to our guests. And Tolliver, you got to watch out because Rita could be a great fill-in for you someday.
I mean, she's got a lot to say. Let her keep going.
actually, Ness Sandoval, what about the issue of race? I mean, that's a big part of this in a lot of cities, isn't it? I mean, there are cities that have had a history of segregation in this country, and there are also newer cities that don't have that same history of segregation.
That is correct. So when we look at the list of cities from COVID that are losing population, there are cities that have had this history of racial segregation. Baltimore, Detroit, Chicago, St. Louis. These are all cities that developed under this era of racial segregation. Houston, Dallas, Phoenix are all cities that developed after racial segregation. And so the opportunity structure is very different in Houston compared to Milwaukee, Chicago, Detroit, where you have spatial segregation. And the magnitude of spatial segregation in these cities does not exist in Charlotte. It does not exist in Houston and Dallas. Although it's there, what we're talking about, the clustering and the concentration, is nowhere near the levels. And so when people go to Charlotte, they can live in an integrated neighborhood fairly easy. Houston, Dallas, Phoenix. And St. Louis is still a very segregated, Milwaukee, Chicago, very diverse cities at the macro level. But the neighborhoods themselves in the city are still fairly segregated.
Dante, Ginny, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, that's the story of Detroit, right? Detroit's population collapse was tied to white flight that really began in the 50s and sped up after the riots in the 60s. And that's really the story. And like the other thing I think that hurt Detroit, no mass transit system, which means everybody had a car. The city was built around the car. The highways were quick ways to get out of town. You could live in the suburbs and work in the city. So I think it's definitely it's a huge part of the story of Detroit. Detroit's about 80% African American, 70%, something like that. Mm-hmm. It's very, very African American city, very black city. That said, it's like I love going to Detroit. I don't feel threatened when I'm in Detroit at all. I love the city of Detroit. The one thing I would say about the caller, to the caller's point, is this.
Yeah.
Yes, it's wonderful there are no gum wrappers, no homeless, and that's the, not everybody's idea of utopia is the same thing, is the one thing I'd say. New York City is a mess, but I love it. I love New York. It's a beautiful mess, and it's not everybody wants the same thing. People want different things where they live. So some people want that urban energy, such as it.
Well, I'm glad that you brought up Detroit, because you're right. There was a time when Tolliver, the Motor City, really seemed like the economic capital of the country.
Yeah, I actually have a clip here that's going to transport us back in time to the Detroit of the 1980s.
From any angle, the face of a city is in part its skyline. So it is with the unmistakable silhouette of the towering Renaissance Center. The hallmark profile of Greater Detroit, Super City USA.
Well, 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 welcome home. Welcome home. Welcome to Super City USA.
You know, the guy sounds like Elvis, Tolliver. I know it's not Elvis, but it sounds like Elvis singing that song.
I'm convinced, man. Let's move to Detroit. Let's do it.
Also, I think we need to make a jingle like that for the middle with like a singers and everything. I think that could be good. We will be right back with more of your calls on the middle.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
I won! Yahoo!
Private, put down your phone. This is the army.
Sarge, High Five Casino is a social casino. It's on your phone. Goes wherever you go. I win free spins, cash, prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. I won again!
Platoon, present cell phone. High five!
High five!
Casino!
Casino!
Win at HighFiveCasino.com!
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino!
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season 1, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season 1, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. We're asking you this hour, what can cities that are losing population do to turn things around? You can call us at 844-4MIDDLE. That's 844-464-3353. Or you can reach out at listentothemiddle.com. I am joined by St. Louis University Professor of Demography and Sociology, Ness Sandoval, and Dante Chinney, who's Director of the American Communities Project at Michigan State University. And let's go right back to the phones and Michael, who's in Birmingham, Alabama. Hi, Michael. Welcome to The Middle. What do you think?
Yeah, thanks for taking the call. Yes, welcome to Birmingham, Alabama. You were talking about a city with historic segregation. And yes, Birmingham for decades has lost population, but in the last census is starting to see an uptick in population. And it's, of course, focused on the downtown core. And I think part of the reason Birmingham is seeing a bit of a turnaround is because it's worked very hard to create an authentic place. And in fact, Birmingham just hosted the Main Street Now conference, the Main Street Organization national conference that usually doesn't come to a city this small. I think Birmingham has done a really good job over the last decade or so in revitalizing its downtown historic core, taking those historic buildings and turning them into lofts, having a wonderful walkable downtown community with cool restaurants and cafes coming in, bakeries, cultural assets that are all walkable. And people are recognizing that if you want an urban experience, you can have it in Birmingham, and yet you're only a half hour away from, you know, getting out to the natural beauty of Alabama. So I think creating an authentic place is one way that you can help revitalize downtowns.
Great, Michael, thank you for that. I'll say, Dante Chinney, that I was just in Kansas City, which has a beautiful walkable downtown with restaurants and cafes and all kinds of stuff. Really nice to walk around in. But I also wonder whether suburbs, as people move more into the suburbs, that they're going to, you know, young people are going to want to recreate spaces that are like cities, basically, with exactly what Michael is talking about.
Yeah, I mean, you can try. I mean, it's so I think, I've seen it's the way the suburbs develop, so, particularly if a suburb evolves around the idea that there was a small town there next to the big city and then stuff popped up around it. You can kind of try to recapture some of that stuff. There's some of that stuff in Detroit on the west side of the city and Royal Oak and Ferndale, these cities that are really close suburbs to Detroit, like within a couple of miles, but have their own distinct feels. But the infrastructure was there in those cases, that they that it was when Detroit was really was further away, the sprawl had to get out to them. So there were towns there. To build that from scratch is difficult. It's very, very difficult to build a downtown atmosphere from scratch. You can try. I mean, I live in DC. Like I say, Bethesda tries. I mean, there's kind of an ersatz downtown, which is fine. I like it. It's nice, but it doesn't feel like the city.
Yeah, it's you're talking about places like the Main Line outside of Philadelphia that are these old towns that have been there for a long time. It's on a train line, and so they've got their own character. Let's go to one of our new listeners in our new city of Cincinnati, Ohio, that just started airing The Middle. Vince is with us. Hi, Vince. Welcome to The Middle.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to say that the easiest thing that can be done is to change the perception. There are no real such things as good neighborhoods, bad neighborhoods, good parts of a city, bad parts of a city. It's whether people are perceiving that's the case, whether that's actually a case or not. Because, I mean, for the people living there, it's where they live. That's a good thing for them. They'd rather be living there than nowhere else. Or rather than nowhere at all. The big concern then is how do you change the perception? And you change the perception by putting your feet on the ground and actually doing things. As the previous caller was talking about their cousin saying, oh, I could buy that house for a dollar and XYZ. Well, buy the house for a dollar. Do something with it. Change it. If you're going to give tax incentives to a business to come into the city, then say, oh, this neighborhood that needs revitalization, well, you can have the tax incentives, but your executives have to live in this area.
Right.
Cincinnati is doing something that's really interesting, is that its Port Authority is buying houses that are dilapidated, that need work and stuff like that, revitalizing them and selling them specifically to low-income families that would not normally be able to get these houses. It's completely restructuring and revitalizing the city itself. You don't need to have this white flight to the suburbs, because the suburbs are just the little boxes made of ticky-tacky, as Movina Ryan said.
Well, there are some nice suburbs out there too, but thank you for that call, Vince. I'm going to get to another one. Tyler is in Chicago. Hi, Tyler. Go ahead. Welcome to The Middle.
Hey, thank you for having me. My question hopefully isn't too much off topic, but I'm from Chicago, which is an extremely developed city, also seeing a fallen population. My question is how much the reaction to the COVID pandemic may have affected larger cities, in the size of Chicago. If that is, for some reason, the shutdown that they have done were kind of forcing people to maybe move out. And you had mentioned earlier in the show, a rise in people moving to more of the Sunbelt states like Florida and Texas. A lot of those cities, when we were completely shut down, they were completely open. And I wonder if that changed anyone's perspective of a city, even though Chicago, in my opinion, is amazing. Yeah. If people maybe think, well, if this ever happens again, if I'm living somewhere, else, maybe the result would be a little bit different.
Great question, Tyler. Ness Sandoval, what about that? The reactions to the pandemic and how that changed migration patterns?
Yeah, I think there is an element to people reassessed where they wanted to live with the option for remote work. I think we see it in Silicon Valley, where people were able to move, and we see that some cities are benefiting from that migration, especially in Montana and Idaho, Denver, Colorado. Remote work is here to stay, right? Companies invested in it. There is a demand for labor, and so trying to convince people to move is very difficult when you have a partner mm-hmm. that needs to move with you to bring families. It's a lot easier to hire somebody who's willing to do remote work. And the infrastructure is built now for many companies to hire people without having to work around the idea of a moving company, finding a house. And so that remote work is going to be here. And that's difficult for companies who are building an idea around tech companies, because it's those tech companies that have the infrastructure for remote work. And so this, I want to come back to this idea of perception, because this is very important.
That was a good point as well.
We live in an era of social media. So we have to recognize that we have great sociological studies that show that people overestimate the actual phenomenon that we're studying. And so social media is very important understanding that people are probably overemphasizing the amount of crime that's happening in the city compared to the actual crime that's happening in the city. And so that perception is very important, and it goes with school districts as well, the perception of a quality school district. And so to changing those perceptions is very difficult, regardless of what the actual data says.
Which the data say right now that crime is coming down.
Yes.
Yes.
But people's perception
feel like
does not correlate to the actual data.
Let's go to Anna, who's in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Anna. What do you think? Welcome to the middle.
Hey, thanks for having me. So I was born in St. Louis, and I moved to Baltimore to go to college, where I've lived here for the past 6 years. So I have perspective from both cities and their similarities as well as their differences. But I agree. I think the thing that people need to change the most is their perception of these cities. All my life growing up in St. Louis County, I was told, avoid the city, it's dangerous, there's too much crime. When I moved to Baltimore, my family said, you're crazy, there's too much crime there, how could you ever go there? Despite the fact that crime's been declining for the past 2 years, lowest homicide rate in a decade in both cities, there's still this perception, which is often rooted in racism. With Baltimore being a majority black city, that it's just a dangerous place, and that's simply not true. So I think what people need to do is actually go out, visit these cities, and check their perceptions at the door. Mm-hmm.
Anna, thank you for that. You know, Tolliver, I want to go to you because you are mm-hmm. a person that will, you don't drive, you walk everywhere.
Yeah.
Are you ever afraid of as you walk around at all?
No, and I've been to a lot of the cities that the two cities she's mentioned. I've never felt afraid in Chicago growing up. I think, I fear, like hops more than I would, just some random guy on the street, just to be honest,
Yeah. Yeah. Let's get to Nikki, who's in Detroit. Hi, Nikki. What do you think cities could do to turn things around if they're losing population?
Well, I think one of the things that Detroit did so well is to get really creative restaurants and bars and stuff that made people come down who used to be afraid to go into the city and realize that it's a great place, and they can drive around, and now there's grocery stores downtown now, there's new buildings, there's new housing, but we still have the school problem downtown. Building up the schools is... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, you think that the nightlife... Is the nightlife more important than the schools to you? Or what do you think? How does it measure up?
Well, to me, because my kids are out of the house. So I'm heading to Detroit right now to go have drinks, And I have been looking to move down there as empty nester. But think it's like you were saying, that the younger people or the empty nesters are moving down because of the nightlife.
Right.
But to get the young families, you need to build up the schools. But when I went to college down there, and there were no grocery stores. There was no... You had to go out to the suburbs to buy anything, and now that all those stores are coming back to the city, so you can stay right downtown.
Yeah. Nikki,
it's a great city.
Thank you for calling in. And Dante Chinney, one of the nice things about doing a show like this that's live in the evening is people are on their way to drinks, or sometimes they've had the drinks and then they call, and we can tell when that happens.
She's at the club
what
right
do you
now.
Make of what do you make of Nikki's comments about nightlife and the importance of it?
Yeah, Detroit is a lot of fun, man. I love going downtown to Detroit. The thing she talked about, though, with this idea of there are more experimental restaurants and things. Look, one of the advantages that Detroit has and these other cities that have struggled for a long time is it's cheaper to do work there. So if you've got an idea for a restaurant, it's not expensive to get a place and try it. And there was a lot of this in Detroit where people took these tiny little places that I'm going to do this here. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this random restaurant here. And it ended up creating like a lot of really good restaurants, a lot of really good bars. And most important, experimental, because it doesn't cost an arm and a leg to get into the game in terms of the nightlife part of it. You can get in cheap. And if it works, you got a hit. And if it doesn't work, you're not out of a lot of money. It leads to more experimental, interesting nightlife.
Let's go to Al, who's in Ketchum, Idaho. Al, welcome to the middle. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to take the contrary point of view that a falling population is not only going to improve your lifestyle, it's going to give you more open space, reduce the cost of housing, congestion, resource use, emissions, everything. I mean, as Sir David Attenborough said, all our environmental problems are either caused by, made worse by, and eventually made unsolvable by our ever-growing human population. You can see it in our emissions, 1980. Since then, we have reduced our emissions per capita in the U.S. 25%. Mm-hmm. The population has risen by 50%. That's why we're not getting anywhere.
Are those birds in the background, by the way? Are we hearing birds in Idaho behind you?
You are. My backyard is full of bird feeders, trees, and birds.
That's nice. So that's why you don't want the city to be growing too fast. Thank you for that call. I want to bring that up because I'm glad you brought that point up. Ness Sandoval, not everybody wants their city to grow. Are we focusing on growth at all costs? Or is there a good thing about a city that is shrinking?
When you talk about historic cities like St. Louis or Detroit, there's an infrastructure that's in place. And so if you have a declining population, there have to be tough decisions about the infrastructure. I think Detroit had this discussion over a decade ago in recognizing that many of the people are not going to come back to parts of the city. And so, yes, you may have to rethink and replan how we give part of the city back to Mother Nature. There are lots of communities, there are lots of cities in the suburbs that we call them NIMBY, not in my backyard, who actually do not, mm-hmm. they're not very favorable for economic development. They don't want attainable housing. They want to preserve their way of life. They want low density, which is fine. And so not everybody wants economic growth in their suburban areas. But I think for the core city, the principal city like Detroit, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, you have an infrastructure in place that can support higher density, that can support economic development. And so I would encourage these cities not to give up and try to encourage population to come back. Just an interesting point about St. Louis City. It's different than Detroit because St. Louis City was a majority Black city. Right now, the white population is larger than the Black population. And if the trends continue, the white population will be the majority in St. Louis City. Wow. It's already the majority in terms of households. And so we're about 5 to 7 years away for that to happen. So St. Louis City is not dying. There's a metamorphosis going on.
Let me finally go to you, Dante Chinney, and ask you whether you think that there is a generational issue. We've heard from younger people. We've heard from older people. Is there something about our generations that affects whether people want to be in cities or whether they don't want to be in cities right at this moment in time? Is that feeding into what we're dealing with?
I think there's always a generational aspect to this, and that you probably want what you didn't have as a kid a lot of times. If you grew up in the suburbs, there's a certain romanticity. The city's a romantic idea, at least when you're young for a while. But again, what does it mean when you're ready to become like your mom and dad? That's the question. Generationally, right now, where are we as cities? Cities had a really nice run for a lot of young people wanting to move back into them after college to have this kind of vibrant downtown life. Is that going to continue? I might be the outlier here, but the idea that like the cities are all going to be empty in 100 years sounds bizarre to me. I expect to see that to continue. Like, look, when you're young and you want to have fun and you want to meet people and maybe you want to meet the person that you're going to be with for the rest of your life, it's easier to do that in a city than it is out in the suburbs.
Well, or just open up your phone is what people do these days, I guess.
That's different. That's
why
true.
Go to a bar when you can just yes. open up your phone?
We
are out of time, except for Tolliver has a quiz for our guest. Tolliver, the floor is yours.
I'll keep it short and sweet. All right. Which American town has the smallest population? And this is a trick question. All right. Buford, Wyoming, Monowee, Nebraska, Hibbert's Gore, Maine, or Lost Springs, Wyoming?
Smallest population. Within the boundaries.
Smallest population. Mm-hmm.
Ness Sandoval, Dante Cheney, any guess?
I would say Wyoming, the town in Wyoming.
Lost Springs, Wyoming. Dante, what do you say?
Well, you said it's a trick question, so I'm not going to say Alaska, mm-hmm. but I was going to say the town in Alaska.
They all have the population of one. One person.
Wow. I was not expecting that.
I will say that's easy to provide services. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, let me thank my guests, St. Louis University Professor of Demography and Sociology, Ness Sandoval, and Dante Cheney, Director of the American Communities Project at Michigan State and a reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Tolliver, what do we have on tap for next week?
Next week, we'll be taking a look inward, sort of. We'll be asking, what can media organizations do to gain or regain your trust? You can call us at 844-464-3353 or write in at listentothemiddle.com. And while you're there, sign up for our weekly newsletter.
The Middle is brought to you by Longnook Media, distributed by Illinois Public Media in Urbana, Illinois, and produced by Joanne Jennings, Harrison Patino, Danny Alexander, and John Barth, who is celebrating his birthday today. Happy birthday, John. Woo! Our intern is Annika Deschler. Our technical director is Jason Croft. Our theme music was composed by Andrew Haig. I want to thank our friends here at St. Louis Public Radio, Ryan Schulte, Wayne Pratt, and Brian Heffernan. And thanks to the more than 410 public radio stations that are making it possible for people across the country to listen to The Middle. I'm Jeremy Hobson. Talk to you next week.
The following is a high-five moment from HighFiveCasino.com.
Welcome to Burger Yippee. Would you like a hot apple pie today?
Yes, yes, yeah, I won! Woohoo!
So that's a yes on the apple pie?
I just went big time playing High Five Casino on my phone. Real cash prizes, free daily rewards, over 1,200 games. Yeah!
So yes or no on the apple pie?
Woo! I won again!
I'll take that as a yes. Drive around.
Have you had your high-five moment today? Only at HighFiveCasino.com.
High Five Casino is a social casino. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Conditions apply. See website for details.
High Five Casino.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.